Blog Talk Radio.
Get on your feet.
You know what that means. Yep, you guessed it. It's a drip to mic day. The author Hezian got his love going up on a Tuesday like it's a Friday. Two literary prodigies, these scholars be so talented they can write a novel about water and still entertain a nice tray. No filters tonight, they might say bright day inducing diatribes that could make a life change. And if you ain't gang gang and don't hang with the Author's Lounge on Tuesday, you might want to rearrange how you prioritize things. This is family, man. The Author's Lounge maintains by overstanding what's understood, so the unnecessary doesn't have to be explained. The pilot and co-pilot flying this plane entertains by unleashing verbal positive cargo as if it's carried by a train nonstop through your earlobes all the way in until it reaches the creative portion of your brain. Drip the mic is going to the top, high like we just copped a whole pound of the best strain, conducting top interviews and use our platform to help those who choose to network and idea exchange. This is 2 hours of insane vibes. The Archer's Lounge goes live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Central and 7 p.m. Eastern. Guess what? We can be heard worldwide. You know, I sit back like watching Hezzy quarterback like he come with the content and the God is love catches the ball like running it up the side. Drip the Mic presents the Author's Lounge. Stick around so we can drop that sound. that up until inception, you and others have been denied. Now, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, let's hear those hands collide, and please help myself and the Drip the Mic Network welcome the Author's Lounge with your host, the author Hezzy, and co-host, God is Love in the building. Let's get it.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Author's Lounge, presented to you by Drip the Mic. Call in at 646-378-0355. Press 1 to speak. And tonight we got a great triple hitter ahead of us tonight, and it's going to be a great show. But first, I want to introduce my stand-in co-host, Miss Philandis. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Free band. I'm good.
Free band.
We're going to have a good night.
Yes, we are. We are. Definitely.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling wonderful, as usual. You know, no complaints. I mean, I'm happy. You know me. I'm here, man. I'm living my life. Hope everybody's around me, living theirs, enjoying, you know, life. No matter what comes your way, like you have to.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, we got a great show tonight.
Absolutely.
We got some great authors on the show. We even got a reggae artist coming through tonight.
Yes, I'm ready.
You know, I'm a little hyped up because I've been watching this.
I asked you earlier today. I was like, are you ready for the show tonight?
You know, I've been watching this Can You Talk challenge, and I'm thinking I can sing a little bit, but, you know, I ain't going to do all that.
Go ahead, bust a note. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, no.
Go ahead, bust
no,
a great.
No, no.
Go ahead, bust a great.
Can we talk for a minute? Oh, let me behave. Let me call you.
Yeah.
Right, goddamn now. If there's a campaign on Drip the Mic, I have to hit that. So, the voices of motherfuckers who can't use them correctly on the damn air, be amongst those people immediately. We're not going to have that shit now. Everything was going great. Everything was going great. Then Philander came with that. Go ahead. Oh, shit.
I'm sorry. That's my bad.
I had to. Oh, no. No. We're not doing that tonight. No, the fuck we not.
Oh, man. I love it.
Well. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry for that. We don't have the insurance to cover people's ear doctors and shit, so we're going to cut that out right now. I'm sorry.
I'm so tickled. Oh, my
God. I want to introduce this first author, man. I'm telling you, he has a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful resume.
Absolutely.
His name is Edward Lerner. He worked in high tech and aerospace for 30 years. As everything from an engineer to senior vice president. For much of that time, writing science fiction as his hobby. Since 2004, he has written full-time. His novels range from near-future techno-thrillers, like Small Miracles, and energized through traditional SF, like Days of Doom, and his Interstellar Net series through collaborating with Larry Niven, the space opera, Epic Fleet, a world series. Lerner's 2015 novel, Interstellar Net, Enigma, won the inaugural Canopus Award honoring excellence in interstellar writing. His fiction has also been nominated for the Locus. Woof, that's a big word right there. I'm going to behave. And Hugo Award. I skipped that one. Linear's short fiction has appeared in anthologies, collections, and many of the usual science fiction magazines and websites. He also writes about science and technology, notably including Trophy, The Light Fantastic, The Science Behind the Fiction. I want to introduce y'all to the mic. Mr. Lerner, how are you doing tonight?
Great.
Mr. Lerner.
Good to be here.
You have to forgive us. This show was a fun show.
I'm supposed to forgive fun? That seems unusual.
I want to thank you again for coming to Drip the Mic. Could you give us a little info on you and your books and what you do?
Okay. You did that at a very high level, the view from low Earth orbit. I'll go a little further. I'm a physicist and a computer engineer by training.
Wow.
Before I got the writing bug, I worked at some of the highest tech of techie places, Bell Laboratories, Honeywell, Northrop Grumman, Hughes Aircraft. For 7 years, I was a contractor for NASA, which got me into all sorts of cool stuff. So I have flown the space shuttle simulator. I've watched a space shuttle launch. I've toured some interesting technology facilities like a satellite plant. When I got the writing bug, this was all very wonderful background. And after I sold my second book, I didn't look back.
So tell me, now, you did NASA, you did engineering everywhere, and I just want to write books. Tell me, how did you come to that conclusion that you wanted to just be a writer?
Well, quite a while ago, in the 80s, I was complaining about something I was reading, apparently more than usual, and my wife said, "So I suppose you can do better." That left me no choice. I had to try, and after a while, it turned out I had an aptitude. I'd been reading science fiction since forever, so that's what I chose to write. And much to my surprise and delight, I sold my first novel, and things took off.
So tell me, what was your first book?
My first book was called Probe, and...
Mm-hmm.
Very briefly, it was about a privately owned spacecraft, which back when I wrote it was unusual. This was before SpaceX. And this privately owned probe was searching for asteroids that had a lot of mineral wealth on them. There are asteroids out there that, if we could mine them, would be worth literally trillions of dollars in precious metals. But what this probe reported instead of finding wealth was that it had found a derelict spaceship floating around in the outer solar system. That's the setup. And what
mm-hmm.
happens from there is different people have different beliefs whether this has happened and what to do about it. And the hero, who is trying to make sense of the situation, finds himself framed for treason and a few other goodies and on the run and has to get to the bottom of what's happening and clear his name.
Okay, so what made you get into science fiction? Because I know you are all around science.
Well,
and,
I've been... Sorry, go ahead.
And I know you have theories. I know you do. Because you've been around science all your life. So tell us about what made you get into science fiction and some of your theories.
Well, I've been reading science fiction for pretty much as long as I can remember. I am a child of the early space race. So I was like 8 years old when Sputnik was launched. And 12 years old when Alan Shepard went into space, you know, the first American astronaut.
Wow.
So back when I was interested in this stuff, I was probably too young to be very clear on the difference between what was science and what was fiction.
Yeah.
Well, I've gotten over that ambiguity. So why do I write it? Well, first of all, because I enjoy reading it. Secondly, because I think it's an amazingly liberating form of literature. You can set a science fiction story anywhere across the universe, which is a pretty big place, and anywhere in time from the moment of creation to the far future. And that's an awful lot of freedom for creating stories. The last reason I like writing science fiction is I know it influenced me as a kid and had a lot to do with why I eventually majored in physics. I like to think that some of the people who read my stories and my books are influenced the same way, that they read it and say, this is really cool. This could happen. I could help make it happen.
No, we don't need that to happen, obviously. So, growing up, you seen the Sputnik and all that. Did you know that you wanted to become an author, or was it after you started working and doing different jobs, like the engineering jobs and the NASA thing, that you was like, hey, I want to write about this stuff?
The urge to write came later. When I was in college, I wrote a couple of short stories and sent them out to magazines. I apparently took the rejection letters very hard because I didn't even think about it again for many years. But then, as I said, I had that basic dare from my wife, and I found I could do it, and I found I enjoyed doing it. I had worked in high tech for 30 years at the point when I sold my second book, so as much fun as I'd had working in aerospace and telecommunications and government contracting, I was ready to do something completely different. This is completely different.
You know, a woman has a way of lighting a flame behind our tails. You know what I mean?
It has been known to happen, yes.
Yeah, because he said that his wife, you know, said that she saw him doing better, so it was kind of like the boost, like she believed in you and she saw a vision that you probably didn't see, that you're now living.
I got even with her. She's my first reader. So she gets to see my drafts before anyone else does.
Awesome. I have a question. So how many books have you written?
22 published. Two more finished and sold that will probably come out next year, and one more that's under contract and is about half written.
Okay. Ooh, nice.
I've been
nice.
Busy.
Yes, of course. So how did you feel when your fan base started really accepting your books, and how did you feel about the feedback?
Well, pretty much what you would expect. Having fans is a good thing. I imagine you feel the same way about the show. In recent times with the internet, there's a whole lot more feedback available. So
yes.
I have a website and people contact me through that and through my blog and through Facebook. And that's great fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Occasionally the feedback is some subtle nuance of science, because a lot of my fan base is formed of engineers and scientists, and if they find a little glitch and I can fix it for the next edition, that's good too.
I'm also an engineer too. But I'm not as high up as you. I just got the associate's degree in engineering, that's it.
What kind of engineering?
Computer, electronics.
Good stuff. A lot of my books are computer themed.
Wow. I'm going to have to check that out then.
Please do.
I'll
so for example, for example, you mentioned my series Interstellar Net.
Yes.
That's what you might think from the name, which is that it's something like an internet, but it goes between stars.
Mm.
And it is that. But because I'm also a physicist, I believe in making things realistic. And the time it takes for radio signals to get between stars is literally years. It's more than 4 years one way to the nearest star.
Mm-hmm.
The premise of the Interstellar Net series is we have neighbors and we get into radio contact with them. And we start out only being able to communicate by radio. That's not as speedy as we might like, but it turns out it can be every bit as competitive as if we were next-door neighbors. Eventually, we do get to be next-door neighbors once we teach each other enough.
That's interesting. So, Mr. Napson, do you think that's real?
Do I think there are really aliens out there?
Yes.
Insufficient information. I mean, the fact of the matter is it's a very big universe. There's no convincing proof that there's life anywhere but on Earth. But the more astronomers improve their instruments and can look farther and measure more, the more Earth-like worlds we find out there. So, as I said, there's no proof, but...
Yes.
As a matter of opinion, do I think somewhere in this vast universe, in all the billions of years the universe has existed, there might be someone else? Sure. I believe that. I just don't know it. Can't prove it.
And you know what? And I think it's all...
Sorry, say again?
I think it's all in the back of our minds, too, that it's something else out there. We just don't know.
An awful lot of people... feel as I do that the odds have to be in our favor. I mean, there are, by statistical estimates, billions of worlds like Earth just in our galaxy.
Yes.
So even if life is unlikely to happen, unlikely and just a total fluke once are very different concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even in our solar system, there's a decent chance that at one time there was life on Mars. There's a decent chance that there's something under the ice of some of the moons in the outer solar system. There's a moon of Jupiter and a moon of Saturn, both of which have liquid oceans underneath world-spanning ice. And if you have liquid water, that's a good place to look for life.
Mm.
The trick is, how do you drill through about a mile of ice?
That's
it in something lightweight enough that you can send it, you know, half a billion miles.
Well, the way we shoot them spaceships in the sky, we're going to figure it out.
I hope you're right. Well, Elon Musk is busy trying to develop ships to send to Mars. So maybe he'll find something.
Yes. Maybe. I wonder. You know how we used to, I know, like in your time, I know you used to watch the Jetsons.
Well, I'm old enough to have watched it, but I was pretty little.
Because I used to watch the Jetsons. That was one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, I love the Jetsons.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that one of the more realistic science fiction shows, but yes, it had its moments.
I mean, I don't know, but I think we're getting, I don't know if we're going to have flying cars anytime soon.
They already started that.
But it's like everything that is being portrayed as like science fiction and, you know, the robots and the new movies, they like the iRobots and everything, it's starting to come to fruition. So with you being an author and explaining these things to us, what do you see yourself going with your science fiction books? What do you see your road hitting in the near future?
Well, the book I'm working on right now is about the near future exploration of Mars and a new space race.
Yes.
And that's something that I think is very likely to happen. I mean, there is some talk of a new space race with regard to the moon. So now India has put a ship in orbit around the moon. They put one in orbit around Mars. China has landed a spacecraft on the backside of the moon. China is talking about putting people on the moon in the next 10 years or so. So there are a lot more countries involved in this.
Did you also hear about the weapon that China has that can travel out of space and can go halfway around the world? It's almost
like hypersonic.
Yes, that's it. Yes.
Yeah, well, all the major powers are working on that technology, the United States too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. I think the general concern about it is exaggerated because the current generation of intercontinental ballistic missiles can get anywhere in the world in well under an hour anyway, so it's not like this is going to be a big change in scariness. It's just a different kind of scariness.
Yes. Wow.
The good news is that since, you know, 1945, no one has used a nuke.
Yeah.
So maybe we're not entirely insane.
I hope not, for sure.
Yeah. You and me and lots of people. The technology that is most interesting and potentially most scary that's coming our way is general purpose artificial intelligence.
Yes, the robot.
Thank you.
What people call artificial intelligence in the press and hype and, you know, products like Siri and Alexa.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting toy. But it's not general purpose artificial intelligence. You can't tell it to do very many things and expect it to figure it out.
Yeah.
A general purpose artificial intelligence would be able to pretty much do anything a person could do as long as it had some form of arms and legs, either in the form of a robot or through something it controlled over the internet.
Well, I see where the U.S. has built robots to use in the military other than using humans.
Yes, they have. They're not very general purpose. They still have people in the loop controlling them. And right now, I don't think anyone really wants to have robots that can make the decision on their own to kill somebody. So, yeah, we have armed drones that carry weapons, but there's a person who decides what's the target and what to shoot at.
Mm-hmm. And we're still having trouble with that now because it's been a lot of civilians getting killed by these drones, too, as well.
Right. And that's not the robot's fault. Mm-hmm. That's a limitation of the quality of the intelligence in the CIA sense, or
the vision
of the cameras on the drone. You know, if you're looking at a car from half a mile in the air and you're trying to figure out if there are civilians in the car or the bad guy you want to take out,
everything.
You can't really see that from from half a mile away.
It's almost like a video game, right?
That's the problem. You don't want killing people to be treated like a video game.
Exactly. Thank you.
But that's what it's like, though. Can we be honest?
Yeah,
but that's
a dangerous video. I mean, if you want to say a video game, like, that's dangerous. Like, you literally...
So, Mr. Love, do you also present this in your books?
I haven't done much with drones in my books. I've done a lot with artificial intelligence. With artificial intelligence, I've done a few kinds. Sometimes it's AI that humans developed. Sometimes it's AI that aliens developed. And sometimes it's a combination.
Wow.
And
so,
one of the fun things in writing science fiction is trying to write a character that's really different. You know, it's the challenge is to write a character that thinks as well as a human being, but not like a human being. And even when that character is thinking differently than us, you still want that character to be understandable to the human who's reading the story. So that's an interesting, fun challenge. Now, when the alien turns out to be an artificial intelligence thinking like, you know, a computer program might, that's a whole new dimension to the challenge of thinking as well as us, or maybe even better than us, but differently.
Yeah, definitely. That's the biggest. So, what is your best series that you think that you have put out that you really like?
Okay, well, asking an author about their favorite book or series is like asking a parent about their favorite child.
But it's all, we always have our baby that we think is our baby.
Right. Yes. Well, the gestation period for babies and books is about the same. This is such a frequent question that, in fact, I put together a collection of some of my favorite short stories that's called The Best of Edward M. Lerner. And I literally signed the contract on that book just last Sunday.
Wow.
So that is going to be my standard answer for this kind of question.
So where can we find
it? It's not available yet.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So as I said, I just signed the contract. It's finished, but it'll probably be on the order of a year before the publisher gets it out the door. You asked about series. Since I only have two, that's easier.
Yeah.
I did one far future space opera type series with a famous collaborator. My partner on this series was Larry Niven, who's best known for a book called Ringworld.
I've seen that book. Yeah.
Okay. The series is called Fleet of Worlds, and it's about a literal group of planets flying through space. Obviously, they have very advanced technology, the aliens who live there. An interesting characteristic of theirs is they are supreme cowards. And so they will go to extreme lengths to avoid risks. And that sometimes includes trying to manipulate the destinies of other species, including humans. So I like that series a lot. And space opera, for listeners who aren't familiar with the term, is kind of far future grand adventure across the light years, sort of in the vein of a Star Wars or a Star Trek.
Okay. Right.
My other series that I did solo is the Interstellar Net series I talked about earlier, where we start out with an internet-type communication and trying to establish a civilization that way. And it turns out by using artificial intelligences that there are ways to get around the light speed limit. You send an artificial intelligence to the other end, and then it represents you.
Wow.
But can you trust the alien's artificial intelligence?
Ooh. See, that's something to think about right there.
Yeah, well, we don't trust our own artificial intelligences, and for good reason. The thing about modern artificial intelligences, they all use a technique called deep learning, which is a very confusing, misleading buzzword. What it means is we take a black box and all sorts of examples of if you see this, then the response should be that. And after you feed it, you know, 10,000 examples, say, of speech, so it figures out how to translate from English to, say, Spanish, then it can translate on its own. But you have absolutely no visibility as to how it arrives at its conclusion.
Exactly.
Yep. It works the same way for AIs that are being used in medicine for, say, examining medical images, you know, to look at pap smears or biopsies to look for cancers. They have a very high accuracy rate, as good or better than radiologists.
Well, but I know it don't work for broken bones, because I went to the emergency room. They said, well, you got a bruise, but come to find out 5 weeks later, I had a broken bone.
Well, I had that experience back in 1970 or so, so I can't blame it on artificial intelligence. I can blame it on natural stupidity.
Right.
Yes, it turns out that the best way to catch a hard ball is not at the tip of your finger.
That's it.
So that must have been a human error then, right?
Exactly. Human error.
Indeed. Those still happen.
Awesome. So what do you see your writing career taking off from this point into the into the near future? And what advice would you give young science fiction authors who's just now starting to write their first science fiction book and trying to, you know, connect with authors?
Okay. Well, the first question, what do I see myself doing going forward, is more of the same. So that's a short answer. what kind of advice to give would-be authors, whether it's science fiction or not, it's the same, which is be very sure this is something you want to do, because breaking into publishing is very challenging.
Yeah.
There are many more would-be authors than published authors, and many more published authors than authors who support themselves at it. And that's not necessarily a statement on the quality of writing of some of the people who don't break in. Luck and contacts and lots of factors play into it. With regard to science fiction in particular, it's easier to get started writing stories than books. There are lots and lots of magazines, particularly electronic magazines, out there these days. When I was trying to get started, there were basically only three magazines out there.
Yeah.
Once you've sold some stories, then you have some credentials when you move up to writing a book and want to talk to book publishers.
Okay.
Another thing about the science fiction genre is it's got a very active fan community. So setting aside pandemic conditions, there are usually lots of conferences out there where fans and authors and editors and publishers and would-be authors get to mingle and meet one another. Often those conventions have very interesting panel discussions by science fiction editors about what they like, what they don't like, what they reject most often. So that would be my advice to authors and science fiction authors.
Okay, so can you explain to the audience where we can find your books?
Strangely enough, I can. Okay, my website, surprisingly enough, is edwardmlerner.com. Lerner is L-E-R-N-E-R. My blog is blog.edwardmlerner.com. Of course, you can find me on Amazon under Edward M. Lerner. You can find me on LinkedIn and on Facebook. So all the usual suspects of websites. And as long as you spell Lerner, L-E-R-N-E-R, there I'll be.
All right. Great. So The Best of Ed Lerner is coming out next year sometime.
Yep. But let's throw in my most recent book that is available,
okay,
which is Deja Doomed.
Tell us about that. That's a weird name.
You twisted my arm. Okay, that's a near future novel set mostly on the moon, and there are small groups of Russians, Chinese, and Americans in different places on the moon.
Oh Lord, that's a catastrophe right there.
Oh, it gets worse. So the setup is that a robot prospecting on the moon for valuable resources finds, instead of valuable resources, a dead body of what's obviously an alien. So the Americans on the moon head over there to see what they can find. And the Russians realize the Americans are up to something, and they head over to see what the Americans are up to. And there are alien technological relics. And you just know that poking around in ancient alien high-tech relics,
yes,
is going to lead to interesting situations, even if there isn't the word doomed in the title.
See,
it's not a horror
like
story, although that setup might make you think it's a horror story. But the probable outcome for most of the characters is definitely horrible. That's Deja Doomed.
Yes, I like the way you explain that, because you're like, here we are, the Americans, and there we go poking around being nosy.
Well, you know, every teenage horror movie, there's a noise in the basement. Let's go down one at a time and check it out. It's in our genes.
Right. I love it. I love it. And then here come the Russians. They're right behind it. Well, what are they up to? You know, and I love it because I like the way you incorporate, like, just general common sense, like what we really do in the real world today. And you put it in the book, and you turn it to science fiction. But you also, you're teaching a lesson of what you will learn throughout life, too. Like the physics and the engineering and the stuff that you have dealt with, like dealing with NASA and everything like that. And I love it.
Because I have that technical background, and I've worked for major technology companies, it's important to me that my fiction have serious, accurate science in it. So when I don't know a particular area of science, I reach out to people who are still practicing, scientists, engineers, and such. I did a medical thriller several years back called Small Miracles, involving nanoscale robots that swim around in your bloodstream to repair things. And for that book, I talked to doctors, biochemists, biophysicists.
Did you ever read about this lady? She said she had a pill, and it's more like a chip. When it gets in your blood, it does all kinds of things. I'm like, really? I was watching the show one night. It was late night, and she was talking about this pill you take, and it does something to your bloodstream, and it can monitor things that's going on in your body.
I read about some medical pills with miniature
mm-hmm.
instruments in them.
Yes.
I haven't heard about them being in blood. I've heard about them being used for virtual colonoscopies.
Mm.
So instead of, having a probe put up where the sun doesn't shine, you swallow a pill and it goes through, it goes through the natural direction, taking pictures as it goes.
Wow. Wow.
So this kind of thing is coming.
Yeah, oh, it is. Yes, it's crazy.
We live in interesting times.
Definitely.
And we need to be appreciative of the advances in medical science, or instead of 800,000 dead in this country from COVID, it would be twice that or more.
But everybody's freaking out. They was like, how can they come up with a cure so fast? How can they come up with a vaccine so fast? But science has progressed so fast.
The mRNA technology that is in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines had been being researched for a related family of viruses for 10, 20 years. They only had to modify it slightly to go after COVID instead of different types of viruses that they originally had in mind.
10 to 20 years, they've already been researched. They just had to modify it.
Yep. And they're talking about modifying it again for some other diseases. So, one of the big drug companies is already looking at changing the mRNA vaccine to target HIV.
Wow. That would be awesome right there. Truly awesome.
Yeah. Science does a lot of good things, and when something bad happens and it goes off the rails, it's also self-correcting. I wish more things were self-correcting.
True. That is true. I want to thank you again, Mr. Lund. Oh, you gave us an education tonight. And I'm so glad you came on the show.
My pleasure.
One more time, I want you to let the audience know where they can find your books.
Amazon, Edward M. Lerner, Amazon Mark. If you can spell my name, you'll find me. How's that?
That's awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Mr. That was Mr. Lerner, everybody. I want you to have a great night. And everybody,
thank
please.
You so much, Mr. Lerner.
Yeah,
my pleasure.
Show.
Thanks for having
please
me.
Please be sure to get his
absolutely.
Book.
Absolutely. Yes, please go out and support.
All right. We're going to take a quick break while I recognize this. Jason! You are welcome to the Author's Lounge. Call in is 646-378-0355. Press 1 to speak. Presented to you by Drip the Mic with my co-host, Ms. Philandis. Yes. Ms. Philandis, how are you? Are you still here?
I'm still here.
Well, I have a special guest coming in.
Okay.
I met this guy.
Okay.
And we.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I might see him. Hold on. My bad.
You can't be having it tonight.
Hey.
He said free bag.
I think we do at the Oh yeah. They in the building.
Oh right. He's in the building.
Y'all in the building.
I have a special little surprise for the office lounge tonight.
Oh, shit. My bad.
I think it's good, though. I think this is good.
I met this guy, and I was like, okay, they say he got some skills. I was like, okay, well, let me hear him. So I said I had to bring him on the show, give him a little shine. I want to introduce to y'all the reggae sensation, Mr. Traffy. Are you on the mic?
Yes, sir.
What's wrong, homie?
What's up? It's a pleasure, you know what I'm saying, to be on here.
What's up?
I'm just here, you know. But, yeah, it's a pleasure to be on this platform, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, to a reggae artist, you know, I've been doing music since I was 5, you know. So, music to me expresses me a lot, and that's what I used to vent, you know. That's what I used to vent. Or when I'm going through a lot of stuff, I tend to write a lot, you know what I'm saying? So if you see me writing, I'm really going through a lot. So music for me, I don't look at it as a money-making thing, or I'm going to do it because everybody is doing it, or I'm just going to do it and make money. Nah, it's not money for me. If I do a song and for example, I do the song and, like, people like the song, but I'm not benefiting from it, you're going to be like, well, that's dumb if you don't really want to benefit from your own song, but it's like this. I do it for the love, you know?
Yes, so, definitely.
Yeah, I don't really do it for the money. But, yeah, music have been a big part of my life since I was 5. The first song I recorded, my father wrote it for me, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then I was off and on until I was 14.
Wow.
So it's pretty much more therapeutic for you.
Yeah. So it's basically a therapy for me.
Well, you know you won't drip the mic.
Yeah.
So you know you got to make this mic drip tonight.
All right. Yeah, I'm saying. I'm going to start off with my single that I'm going to... that I already recorded my first single, and I'm going to drop it next year, February, hopefully, with the music video for it. So I'm going to perform it right now for you guys. Yeah. Is she rubbing cream? Does she... Is she rubbing cream? So she looking all white. I me chasing dreams, so me I go all right. Me pull up my thing, yeah, me in a all white. Me had the rock Gucci, but me will rock the off-white. Yeah, me I go all right. I me chasing dreams, so me I go all right. Me pull up my thing, yeah, me in a all white. Me had the rock Gucci. Yeah. The party, she have it. Me about it. Me set up on table. Me baby, me got you. You make me feel happy like me win the lotto. And everything when someone knock me, yes, it coming at you. Right. But me are trying not to make it come out. And when she gossip with her friend, the things she had talk about. And when she done, she can't walk when she ready to lift up. Yeah, Z-chat, Mrs. Scobab, she eat that. Yeah. Yeah, she looking all white. I'm a chasing dreams, so me, I go all right. Me pull up and sing, yeah, me in a all white. Me had the rock Gucci, but me will rock the off white. Yeah, me, I go all right. I'm a chasing dreams, so me, I go all right. Me pull up and sing, yeah, me in a all white. Me had the rock Gucci, yeah. Me is a melodical poet in the making, and bad mind the flow when me have see the same thing I got. Make me still day a G, not forsaking me do. When me please and me don't need your ratings. Keep your ailings, a fake like a maze ring. Yeah, we competing for fun, but me leading. Them exposing a lot like a G-string. Me just stick by my part, do my own thing. Yeah, me in a all right. So me go all right. Me pull up and sing, yeah, me in a all right. Me hardly rock Gucci, but me will rock the off-white. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. I like that. That's so catchy. I love it.
Yeah.
I like that. Really. Good job.
Well,
Okay, I got like 50 songs. I just haven't. I'm just focused. I'm just focusing on this one. You know, I feel like this is the breakthrough. Not really like that, but it's like everybody. The first time I freestyled it, it caught the person, and he was like, "Hold up, play that back." And I'm like, "Okay," because it was a recording, and he was like, "Hey, bro, this the hit," you know. So yeah, that's why I'm pushing it February to get the video out for it.
What social media platforms can we follow you on?
Okay, well, I have my Instagram right now. And I put a snippet on it, so it is ZCHAP. RAFFY. So it's ZCHAPTRAFFY. So that's
definitely,
yeah.
Definitely. And we straight gonna broadcast that that video and the song. We're going to play that,
yeah.
Man. Definitely. Yeah, I appreciate you coming on the show, too. See, I always like to pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And yeah,
stay in contact with him.
Yeah.
I'm going to reach out to you about something.
Okay. If you want me guys to drop one more, you know? I can drop another one before I go. This song. When I was in Orlando, because I used to stay in Florida, when I was in Orlando, like every girl in school, they always want me to sing this song, so I'm going to sing
it.
Every day I go to school, they ask me for the same song, so I'm going to sing it. Hey.
Come on,
that'd be terrible.
You ready?
They do it like you, no.
Yeah, they always ask me when I'm in the hallway, sing the song, and they take their phone out and record and stuff like that, so I'm going to sing.
I can hear them there. Traffic, come over here and sing that song for me.
You know you got them girls that you can sing, boy. Play your
Darling, you be that.
Free
yeah, they're more like.
Yeah.
I would get them.
Yeah, because I'm a chill person, so they gravitate to me a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, yeah, but it goes like this.
Looking at your eyes, your body clean, because of something tight. Love it when I'm looking at your eyes and take you by surprise. And then inside your clean, because of something tight. She think, and then I start to bite. Yo, love it when I'm looking at your eyes. Your lips start to bite. Everything just right. Hey, baby, something clean. Come on, look, the thing, things not the way it seems. There's no other girl. Baby, you are my world, my diamond and pearl, my straight without curl. There's no other girl. I'm something, yes, girl, if it's been a girl. I've never met no girl like you before. Love China intercept like the number 4. I mean, know you love it. To make you hardcore. Me love it. Tell me looking at your eyes. Your body clean. There's something tight. Oh, love it. Tell me looking at your eyes. And take you by surprise. And then inside your. Your body clean. There's something tight. Oh, me feel it. Then me start to bite. Yo. Love it. Tell me looking at your eyes. Your lips start to bite. Everything just right.
Yeah.
Yo,
yeah.
I love
okay.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you got my co-host over here blessing me with a high bet tonight.
Hey.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay.
Nah, send him away for easy.
Oh, boy, I'm going to be hating.
That's hot, though. That's really dope.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
Man, thank you for coming on the show, my dude.
My pleasure, my pleasure, most definitely, you know.
Thank you, thank you. Give them your Instagram handle again before you go.
Okay, it is ZCHAPTRAFFY. Z-Chop Trophy.
Yeah,
that's it. And thank you for having me again. You know what I'm saying? I really appreciate that.
No problem. No problem, my guy. No problem. Thank you.
You guys have a blessed night.
You too.
You too. Have a blessed one.
Okay.
You all right over there, Palermo?
I'm fine, silly.
Oh, yes.
You're so silly. I'm not going to fight with you.
Okay. Let's continue on. Welcome to the Author's Lounge, presented to you by Drifting Mike. Call in 646-378-0355. Press 1 to speak, and I'm going to have my co-host introduce the next guest.
Yes. Dr. LaTracy is a publisher, clerk, amalgamated entrepreneur, and CEO, founder, and originator of Black Authors Rock, full service coaching, consulting, publishing firm, online community, as well as bookstore owner for aspiring writers and authors. Having owned a portfolio of reputable success, numerous bestsellers, and the establishment and publishing of more than 65 authors, Dr. LaTracy has become one of the most trusted consultants in the nation. Dr. LaTracy combines her passion for people with sincere regard for education, humanitarianism, and creative entrepreneurship. Dr. LaTracy has earned her master's in nonprofit management and executive leadership from St. Thomas University and has obtained an honorary doctorate of humanitarianism from Global of International Alliance. She has been recognized for her local and national contributions to society. These deeds signal the mark of a woman determined to both serve and succeed. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Dr. LaTracy, leader, organizer, and philanthropist. Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me.
How are you tonight?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm fine. I hope you're enjoying the show. We're a little crazy around here, but.
Then listen, I'm here for. Yes.
No, they whole crazy. Yes. Ain't a little about yes. Crazy. They whole crazy. They all the way. Ain't a little. They, like, they all the way there. However the dial goes, however far it goes, that's how crazy they are. He tried to slip that little
that's
shit
so
in.
That's so funny.
Ain't no crazy.
Like, we're actually having fun tonight.
That's okay. That is okay.
Ms.
Well, thank
Co-host,
you for having me on the show.
Definitely. I'm glad you came.
Glad
you
you're here.
Powerful resume.
Thank you.
And I want to commend you on all that you do, first of all. And I want to also commend you as being a powerful Black woman, a strong Black woman, and representing, you know, for all the women out there, first of all.
Yeah, it's an honor. Somebody got to do it.
Yes, and you're doing it.
Yes.
So. I don't even know where to start. I'm a little nervous, but
I know. I'm an open book. So let's begin. Yes.
So tell me what got you. Okay, first of all, tell me what got you to writing. And
life,
then we're gonna get into everything else.
Growing up, I was always taught that what happens in this house stays in this house. So writing was my therapy. Even though I was brought up in church, sent to church, I didn't truly understand, well, if you go to church, you're supposed to be delivered from some of the things that you're going through. Well, you're not supposed to tell your business at the church either.
That's right.
So I wrote everything down and throughout everything that I went through, with me writing it down, I was always told not to even publish it or share it because that was still telling your business. And so when I got free, I decided to take people with me. And so it took me writing for over 20 years
for me to publish my first book in 2000 and what was that? 2013. And it was my coming out. It was me sharing my story. It was me being able to be open and honest with myself and sharing all of my experiences. So whether they were good, bad, or ugly, I shared them. But the note is that I learned over the years through education how to share my story without bashing people or incriminating myself, because you can't always say, okay, well, this person did this to me, especially if you didn't, you know, take care of it another way. So,
and that's the thing, because I can relate to you, because me growing up and going to church, like, I was like, why are we going to church? And it's like we praying to this mean God, and then we go home and everything's still the same. And it's like what goes on in the house stays in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, through my experiences over the years, it took me almost, like you said, 20 years to write my first book, but it was like the chains was broken. But
yes.
I never really bashed anybody. I just told my story. And my story was, you got ahead
to that place, though. No, I'm saying you got to that place to be able to tell your story without bashing.
Mm-hmm. And
hurt people.
They kind of say it was bashing, but it wasn't bashing, because it was definitely, it was like maybe they learned what they learned from the people they learned from. And that's why I had to learn the way I had to learn from them. And I couldn't call myself a victim either.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the choices I made.
Of course.
I get
that.
Mm-hmm. Because I can still play the victim now.
Yeah, we good at that. We know how to do that.
you know, and so after you wrote that first book and you felt like the change was broken, How did you feel? How did your family take that in as you wrote your first book and as you continue on with your story?
Well, to be honest, I don't believe they even read it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they didn't read mine either.
because they still haven't said anything.
Yes.
So I don't believe that they've read it. I know they didn't buy it. A lot of my family, I even gave them books, and I don't even think they read it. So I'm okay with it, and I've come to grips with not needing their validation in order for me to continue to excel.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So after you wrote your first, yes, we are. Sometimes I feel like hooking the chains back up, and like I'm the victim, but. That's something I'm working through too, but you know, because we went through a lot.
And but we made it.
I always say this thing. It was like when they freed the slaves, they didn't teach us. They freed us, but they didn't teach us how to live.
Yeah. But you see. That's no different than being in church. And this is not church bashing because I'm also a pastor. But even in saying that, we know how to do church well, but we don't know how to do life well.
Yes, that's it. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. See, they freed us, but they didn't teach us how to live. And we grew up in that. I don't know if you're from, are you from up north or are you from down south?
I'm from Minnesota.
Okay. Well, going to church was always, to me, like a chore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't want to go. Because my grandmother, she was a good praying woman, and she kept the family together. But at the same time, it was like, what's going on in our household needs to be told. Nobody knows. And going through these things. So you being an author, and you telling this, and then everything that you're doing now, how did you get that drive and that determination?
To be honest, I saw my children go through the same thing that I went through growing up. And yet I didn't uncover them, but I shared that I didn't have the protection or the covering that I needed growing up, and I made it my business to be a better parent for my own children. And so even though I've messed up, have not been the best parent, I've messed up. It wasn't always easy. And yet, I made sure that I was an advocate for my children because I didn't have one growing up myself.
I definitely connect with you on that, because when my daughter was born, I was like, I'm never going to be like my parents was. But at the same time, I was 50-50 on that, even though I never put my hands on her or talked to her in a different kind of way. I still was like trying to find my way. And my way wasn't with her.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, man, I'm still trying to find my way in this world. I still haven't figured out who I am. So I lost a lot of years with her trying to find my way.
Mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? So it's like it was no different.
Oh, yeah,
than,
I get it.
So it was no different than basically what I was going through, because I was absent. So with you being a parent and all, and you doing all that you do, I just want you to explain to the world what you do and all that you do.
Well, I make dreams happen.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's me in a nutshell. It is so funny because if someone comes to me and says, hey, I have a story inside of me and I want to publish it, then I assist them with that process from start to finish. I show them how to make multiple streams of income from their book project, even before the book project is completed. I show them that if they go all right. Yes. I show them that even if they go the route of being a part of an anthology, there's multiple different ways that you can make money after you have contributed to that anthology. I work with individuals right where they are. A lot of people culturally do not know how to support one another.
They don't know.
They expect, no, and they get mad when you're doing something that they know they should have done.
Yes.
So 2 weeks ago, we just had our literary awards gala in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't seen a literary awards gala, but I knew that we as authors were not being recognized, nor were we truly being supported. And so I just opened up the doors for that opportunity to happen. And so for me, when I say I make dreams happen, I may joke about it, but real talk, that's what I do. So when a person says, well, you know what, I want to become a vendor, or I want to make sure that my book is on the bookshelves in different bookstores, I show them exactly how to do that. And then when they told me that we couldn't get our books in the bookstore, I started our own bookstore.
Wow, that's good. Now, I got a question. Can you do it and make it cost efficient?
Yes.
That's what a new office needs, some cost efficiency.
But see, here's the deal. It's a difference between having it be cost efficient and
paying
your dues. No, because I've been running across the fact that because we are a black-owned business, that we should not charge our worth. But
no,
you also want, right? Or hey, I want you to publish my book, and I'm not going to pay you. All of those. So it's just the mindset of our people. I love helping our people, and even though our people have been the ones that have hurt the most, to have payment plans. That helps you right where you are, to be able to show you how to properly have pre-sales before your book is even completed. All of those different things, the systems that are in place for you to get things done efficiently and effectively.
So what gave you the inspiration to want to do that, to want to help others, and that's to be there for them, and let them see their dreams come true?
Well, it was back in 2018. I had already had a lucrative publishing company for 4 years prior. But one of the things that I found was it was our people that lacked the support. I was tired of going to my family's homes and seeing the books that I have shipped to them never be opened. I was tired of having events and my own people were not showing up. So I sat on the side of the bed and I'm like, okay, God, listen, you gave me this assignment, and he gave me the assignment to create the very thing that I need. And so in creating the very thing that I needed, I created a tribe. I created the community, the Black Authors Rock community, online. It's international. It is effective. It's not a promotional group, and a lot of people get that screwed because you're not going to come here. A lot of us are authors. This is not the group to come and promote. This is the group to learn how to support, to get equipped, to get edified, and enlightened. Because once you're trained, then you can go out and do that. You can make that money. You can make that influence. We have 5,000 individuals in our community. There are other communities that have a whole lot more people, but it's effective. And if you're not effective and active in the group, you have to be removed, because I believe that if you're carrying dead weight, then you're not going to be able to carry what you actually need to have into your next season.
I like. Well, hey, that's that's awesome. But, you know, sometimes in these groups, they are so – I don't know what to call it. I don't. They're so picky-tack and picky. And so it takes away from, okay, I don't want to be in no group at all because I can't deal with this person and that person. How do you differentiate your group from the other groups that's online?
It's me. I have created an idiot. Just like, we can have another publisher on this same call. They can't do what I do the way that I do it. And I don't believe in competing. I believe in collaborating.
Yes.
I believe that we can work together. I believe that there are different things and different ways that we can be creative to market the strategies that are out here as authors. Everyone jumped on the bandwagon when Create Space turned to KDP and they could publish for free. But they didn't realize the limitations.
Exactly. They didn't.
They're not being educated. They just see, oh, okay, well, we're Amazon subsidiary.
You know
and
what?
We can
when
go,
you got Amazon, you can't go to a bookstore and be like, I want to do a book signing here. You know why? Because if it's not Barnes and Nobles and if they can't return your book, if you don't sell, they will not accept you for book signing.
But a lot of people don't know that. And then they get mad at me for educating them on that. And then they say, well, why didn't you tell me? Well, no, you said you had your own ISBN number.
Right.
That's not yours. I mean, and even if you use a ISBN number from Black Authors Rock, trust that we're going to stand behind our product. And we're going to support you. So when you're using our ISBN number, you can go into all of these different bookstores because we will sign the paperwork for you to have your book signing or have your books on the shelves. But here's another kicker. A lot of people are saying, well, I'll start my own publishing company. Okay. Do you have the expertise? Do you have the experience? Do you understand and have the wisdom to run a publishing company, or did you just purchase ISBN numbers, and did you just go on Fiverr? And I'm not knocking Fiber. I'm not knocking, you know, your aunt Bam Bam and cousin Junebug that's going to edit your book. I'm not knocking any of that. But if that's the way that you have chosen to do it, don't get upset if you're not making the money. Because after your favorite five, no one else is going to purchase your book.
Exactly. And, you know, for me, I've been in the game about 4 or 5 years now. And I've took my bumps and bruises, and I've took my, you know, my ups and the downs. But I know how the game is now. So I've got smarter on how I want my books to do, how I want to market my books, and how I want control of my own books. I don't want to put it in the hands of somebody else. And for these young authors, they just think, oh, I wrote a book, I'm going to make millions. No, it doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It does not work that way. I can say I wrote 5 books. I won off of you, but boom, I still have no revenue coming in. But that's the lesson I've learned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And see, and a lot of people don't want to pay to learn that lesson. But,
nope.
You know, culturally, we're taught the best lesson is a bought lesson because you're going to pay for it either way.
Right. They were like, oh, why don't you go get a lawyer and do this? No. I just know how to do business the next time, my way.
Mm-hmm.
It's you live and you learn. I don't have to go do all that. No, it's our people, so I learn how to do it my way. I can do it my way now.
Mm-hmm. and the thing is, just like you guys have read my resume.
Mm-hmm.
I don't boast about my experience. I don't boast about the money that I've spent to learn these different strategies. If you don't know me from social media or either from any of the accolades that I've accomplished, I'm not even going to push the issue that I have a DR period in front of my name. But you're going to understand that I don't tolerate the lack of knowledge.
Yes.
I believe that we should all grow together. Let's collaborate together. Let's make that journey together so that we don't have to continue to struggle.
Exactly. So tell me, what calling did you have that make you want to be a minister?
Well, let me
and how did men perceive you as being a minister? Because you know
well,
the
if you
old
see my
school
picture
ministers
on the slide,
don't like a woman being a minister.
Don't I know? I currently live in Mississippi. And I've been here 11 years. And so coming from Minnesota to Mississippi, that's the first question that people ask me.
Lord,
why
I'm
are you here?
Mississippi.
What brought you here? And I would say the Lord.
Yes.
They're like, whatever. have I been put out of some churches being a woman? Yes. Have I not been accepted? Yes. Even my pastor is a woman, and she's in Georgia. But do I understand that this assignment was given because I'm strong enough to handle it? Yeah. Did I moonwalk many a day, and even down to the fact that I don't like to sit in the pulpit because my facial expression will tell you some things. I have red hair. I don't fit the box of a regular pastor, and so I get it, and I'm grateful that my overseer knows and loves me and trusts the God in me. Because I can reach those that other people that have on that long road can't.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm grateful for the anointing that's on my life and the fact that I can get down with the get down, and I'm not afraid to.
And see, for me, I love that because, like you said, me growing up, I was Baptist, I was Methodist, I was Pentecostal. I didn't know what I was. We was whatever
right.
The parents was. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever the parents decided they wanted to be throughout their journey, that's what the kids was.
Mm-hmm. Everybody was confused. Mm-hmm. Because no one knew. No one knew God for themselves.
And yes, definitely. And that's, I think that's why I really connect to you tonight, because I'm like, you know, it's not all about, it's the God, like you said, it's the God in me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the picture that they painted to us growing up was not a picture that we could look at.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. No. But then they taught us differently.
Yes.
But see, we didn't read it for ourselves, and yet we didn't know him for ourselves. And so
mm-hmm.
for me, it doesn't matter who you believe in. It doesn't matter what your belief system is. It's about love, and it's about understanding. Get an understanding yourself.
Yes.
Whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
So when people look at, you know, their own religion, I have been a pastor in the Methodist Church, in the Baptist Church, in the non-denominational. I mean, my children have gone from the Pentecostal with me where we had to wear the skirts all the way down to the floor,
oh,
you know, no
Lord,
makeup.
And,
nothing.
And I'm trying to tell you, they some of the, woo, I ain't even going to say.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I've been kicked out of a lot of different churches because I've asked questions or I've challenged, you know, the circumstances
yeah.
or the opportunity. So I get it. I get it. Mm-hmm.
So what do you see your expansion going from the point you is right now to pushing towards, I say, 3 years in the future? What do you see yourself?
Wow. Honestly, I would like to have multiple bookstores in different states to be able to reach people right where they are
mm-hmm.
and host these events to acknowledge and support and to encourage and educate authors and artists right where they are. I started Black Authors Rock on the side of my bed in 2017, this time of the year. And then when we started the bookstore on Keesler Air Force Base, and people did not like the fact that my business was named Black Authors Rock in Southern Mississippi, and they
oh,
ridiculed
no.
and attacked and insulted and slandered me, which they still do, and yet I still stand. I
Amen.
Just went out and started a nonprofit called Bar Arts Collective. Still the same acronym, and yet it just expanded my reach, not just for literary, but including culinary, performing, and visual arts. And so I desire within the next 3 years to be the Black Amazon.
We need that. We definitely need that.
Yeah.
And
I believe that it will happen.
Because it's a lot of Black authors out there that are phenomenal. They might not be the Wadia Clarks or the Sister Soldiers, but that work is quality, and sometimes it's better than what they are putting out. But because we
mm-hmm.
are so not marketed, it's hard. You can go on Walmart. You might see 4 Black urban books.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing else. But why is that? Why is it so hard to get in Walmart? Why is it so hard to get into Barnes & Nobles? You're going
because
to Barnes & Nobles,
want to
you don't see
the
new route. Black office. You see the old Black office.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know,
so why?
And if Jeff
because
Bezos
people want
to make
settle.
All his money off of us,
Why can't we?
Mm-hmm.
We sell our book for $20, he'd give us $3.
But people keep doing it because they don't want to invest in knowing how to properly market their books outside of Amazon. So, for example, we gave people in the beginning of January an opportunity to market their books online as well as in the bookstore and at every vending event that Black Authors Rock attends. They had to send in 10 books. They were interviewed. They were spotlighted on our community, on our e-blast and everything, and now our magazine. And yet, people did not want to pay. At that time, it was only $150.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's $300. But they didn't even want to pay the
$150. Wow. Can I get that $150 deal?
See, and you know the funny thing is we laugh about it, but I had just wrote that down on my notebook, was that over the holiday, I was going to offer it again for
$150.
Mm-hmm. We laugh about it, but I want my people to succeed.
Yes. But
so why
but you're
not?
You're so right, though. We are so scared to invest in us. But when somebody else come with the deal that's not like us, we jump on it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's all about the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure how to fix that issue, but what I do know is that I'm not going to stop creating the experience that people need in order to move to the next level. I just secured a venue this afternoon for our next big event. We have a couple of small ones in January and in February, but our big event is the bar experience. But I was strategic because I chose a venue in Gulfport, Mississippi. Why? Mississippi is not known for stuff like that.
It's not. No, you're right. How can we be a part of that?
Well, you can join forces by either being a marketing sponsor, attending, supporting, being a vendor, all of those different things.
I would like to be a vendor. I also like to be a marketing supporter. That's if Drifter Mike give me my T-shirt or hoodie or whatever to come to Mississippi, you know. I'm still waiting on that budget.
I got you.
Yes, I'm calling my CEOs out. But, yes, I would love to do that. I would love to do that.
Yes, let's definitely do that. Let's have that conversation because it's so important. And so when I left today looking at this 9,000 square foot venue, knowing that a lot of the people were not going to be ready for the vision that God has given me for us to have a bar experience, and it's going to be March 5th. 2022 here in Gulfport. Mm-hmm.
What is that on the weekend?
That's a Saturday. Mm-hmm.
I'll be there. I'm in Atlanta, so I'll be there.
Awesome. I'll be in Atlanta this weekend.
Uh-oh. We might have to have something then.
Yes. I'll be there Thursday through the weekend. But, yes, it's all a part of collaborating. And see, even I was having a conversation with another colleague yesterday about having our next gala in Atlanta and looking for a venue for that and asking the people in our community online where do they want to have our next big event. they said Atlanta. But when they said Atlanta, all those people who said it don't even live there.
Oh, that's, see, that's the problem. Everybody wants to come, but they don't come.
No, but we're going to give them a reason to. We just,
that,
I mean, we just had
awesome,
our gala in New Orleans. I don't live in New Orleans. But we hosted the event in New Orleans because God told me to go where you are celebrated and not tolerated.
Yeah.
So definitely. I'm ready.
I'm
so ready.
So have you been working on any books since you've been doing all of this?
I have. And so we actually have the first of the year. We have three of our clients and one coming from Black Authors Rock that will be debuted on the first. So I'm excited.
Wow.
I'm excited. So it's all going to be coming out. But see, a lot of people don't understand that it's okay to have writer's block. It's okay to have a plan. Just like we're having a vision board event in January. It's okay to plan out and have a vision, but be able to move and shake and change things up a little bit. You may have to shift.
That's awesome. Can I hear my co-host? I think she has a lot of questions for you.
Come on, co-host.
To...
Let's do
no,
it.
No.
Yes.
Ms. Philanders? Okay. I think we're having some technical difficulties right now. So I'm going to keep talking. She's trying to get on. So tell us about this gala, because, you know, a lot of people don't understand what it is or what you're trying to do.
Well, we just had the gala on December 4th in New Orleans. It was a sold-out event. It was phenomenal. A lot of people looked at all the pictures, the videos, and everything. Did we make some mistakes? Yes. But they didn't know that there were even mistakes that were going on. Because, you know, we were raised, don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. And so I took that into business. The gala had over 93 individuals who were nominated, and it was over 10,000 votes that came through within a seven-day period for these individuals.
Wow.
Now, a lot of people out of those 93, a lot of people did not invest in themselves. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and yet just because you're nominated does not mean that you are not in a place where you don't have to show up, whether you show up virtually or show up in person. So we had over 67 individuals at this gala in New Orleans. It was a phenomenal week. We had honored Queen Harriet Harrison, who is one of the oldest elders in New Orleans, her late husband. They have a program in New Orleans where they give out free books to our babies. And so I went out into the Black Authors Rock community and asked them whether or not they wanted to sponsor this program and donate a book or two to this effort. I love giving back. I'm a giver. So not only did we have attendees receive a bag, a Black Authors Rock bag, they received the mug, the pen, the journal, and the Black Authors Rock magazine, in addition to them attending the gala with a 10-course meal. You talked about some New Orleans food. It was amazing. We had the masked Indians come in and welcome us. They danced and welcomed us when they came in. We had a phenomenal saxophonist and keyboardist, and, oh, it was so good. I look forward to the next one, and, you know, all of my events always get better, And so the next gala, I'm looking to have it in Atlanta, but also to make it a couple of days, an event, a conference and gala, because I believe that people
awesome.
Need to not only be, yeah, people need to be educated and supported.
That's definitely that's definitely true. Educated on just the little nuances of writing.
yes, definitely. Because but they don't, and this culturally, because even in Atlanta, mm-hmm. a lot of authors don't have a problem with investing, but in the South, it's not necessarily accepted or even embraced to invest in themselves.
You know what I learned, too, since I've been in Atlanta, that it's a whole lot of us that don't know how to read either.
That's so true. But mm-hmm. see, here I have a 9-year-old, and she has been diagnosed with autism, Asperger's, and ADHD. And during the pandemic, she didn't want to read. So I told her she had to write.
Okay.
Now, that little creative baby, because, you know, they learn different. They're artistically intrigued. And so what she did was she had her phone. I have adult children, and her big sister bought her a phone. And she learned how to speak into her phone to type her book.
Awesome.
So she wrote a book. But then she had to turn around and read me the book before I would publish it. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that use the excuse or don't even make up an excuse. They just don't read. But then they're mad that they don't get the benefit. And so there's more than one way to skin a cat. I just tell people to go after it and learn. There's too many free resources out here for academics. And I'm not the smartest one in the group, but I'm also not the lowest one on the totem pole. So let's be vulnerable enough to grow together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight. It was very educational as well. And we're going to have to talk, because I'm going to be in Atlanta, you're going to be in Atlanta, so we're going to get together, and I got some things to run by you.
Okay. Well, you have my information. Yes. I'll be there Thursday morning.
And I want you to give the audience some more information about where they can find Black Authors Rock, how they can submit their books to Black Authors Rock, and just to get in touch with you, because you are amazing.
I appreciate that. Yes, you can find me on social media under Black Authors Rock Community on Facebook, Black Authors Rock page, as well as Black Authors Rock Bookstore on Facebook. And then we're also on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. And
awesome.
Then myself personally, I am Dr. LaTracy on Facebook.
All right, this is Miss Dr. Tracy, y'all. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And
you are welcome.
Have a blessed night.
Thank you. You do the same. You let me know how I can support you.
All right, I will do. I will be getting in touch.
All righty. Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Authors Lounge tonight. This has been a wow, awesome show tonight. And I've been working on something for the past, I could say, month. And after each show, I share a little bit of it. But I want to share the little preface to my book. It's called The Invisible Woman. And it's going to be available, God's willing, February the 14th. So I just want to share a little bit of the preface, which where the preface is done and everything else is just coming all together. So I want to share a little bit of the preface, which I remember the first time I saw her. I tried to find words to describe her, but I couldn't. Nothing had prepared me. Nothing that I had ever experienced before. I could say 1,000 words, but none could describe her. You must witness this to be understood, and yet I've seen her. And before I first cast eyes on her, some called it infatuation, maybe even lust, others love. But those words was nothing compared to what I experienced. Surrounded by the illusion of the fantasy of right and wrong, to know it, you must have experienced it. The butterflies, the look in her eyes, then her name becomes clear. It is her, and her spirit tortures me to the core. She left me here alone with her sun rays beaming, but still her love enchants me, and this is just the beginning. This is the preface from The Invisible Woman, written by me, Arthur Hezzy. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank my co-host, Ms. Philandis. I want to thank the CEO and everybody that tuned in tonight. Call in again. It's 646-378-0355. Press 1 to speak. And y'all have tuned in to the Office Lounge. And have a great night. Goodbye.
In the night, like the diamond you are. I'm good on the side, so light, just hold me in the dark. No one's gotta know what we do. Hit me up when you fall. Feels better than this. Feels better than this.